Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast of the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. I'm David Bowes, your host. Internationally acclaimed pediatric neurosurgeon Dr. Ben Carson of Johns Hopkins University was invited to be the commencement speaker at Emory University. Dr. Carson is internationally known for his tremendous skill as a surgeon and for his groundbreaking work successfully separating conjoined twins that were attached at the skull. But he is also known for his philanthropy and his up-from-poverty story. Yet greeting Dr. Carson's scheduled commencement address was a letter to the editor in the Emory Wheel, the student-run paper of the university, in which listeners were warned about Dr. Carson's views on evolution. Among other things, Dr. Carson's judgment and commitment to science was questioned because he had previously expressed concerns over the ethical implications of Darwinism. The letter was signed by four faculty from the biology department and referenced additional online co-signatures of around 500, including faculty, students, and graduates. While the letter did not seek to disinvite Dr. Carson, it clearly sought to make him look foolish and distorted his views. Among the assertions made was that he was wrong to question the potential impact of evolutionary theory on ethics. However, scientists have long recognized that evolutionary theory does have ethical implications. Professor Richard Weikart, a fellow with the Center for Science and Culture, joined me to talk about the controversy. Those who are protesting the commencement speech of Dr. Ben Carson, they're saying that people need to be concerned because he's brought up ethical concerns about evolution. Mm-hmm. You point out, as a historian, you've studied this area. Mm-hmm. Where are they going wrong?
I mean, where are the Emory folks going wrong?
Right.
Well, one of the claims they made in the article, I actually looked at the full article there in the Emory Wheel, the full letter that they wrote, and they made the claim that he's trying to apply Darwinism to religion and ethics, and they think that's illegitimate. Now, that's a common move that Stephen Jay Gould made in his book Rocks of Ages, where he argued for the non-overlapping magisteria idea, the noma idea, that religion and evolution are two separate categories and they can't blend. But I would guess that the majority of evolutionary biologists do not believe that, that they do believe that evolution has something to say about morality, and specifically about the evolution of morality. Now, they may not believe that evolution can give you a moral code. You know, they may not believe that, so they may think there is a distinction there. But most of them do tend to believe that morality evolved by Darwinian processes. Darwin certainly did, and the Descent of Man, he lays out the argument and spends a couple chapters on it, in fact. And it seems to me that the prevailing view today among biologists is that morality evolved, which means there are no objective moral truths. They're part of our instincts. And so E.O. Wilson and Michael Ruse's idea that morality is an illusion fobbed off on us by our genes to get us to cooperate is actually a pretty widespread idea in evolutionary circles. And I'd be very surprised, by the way, if none of those Emory biologists believe that.
So in layman terms, what are the implications for ethical considerations if there is no objective morality and if it's simply a function of genes?
Well, then that means that everyone is simply acting according to their own instincts. Now, people like Darwin had great confidence that if people were acting according to their instincts, that they would obey the golden rule. He says this explicitly, that he thinks the golden rule is what part of our instincts. But they don't really have any fulcrum by which to argue against those who would say, well, wait a minute, my instincts tell me to be aggressive. My instincts tell me to look out for number one. My instincts tell me whatever. And in fact, there are many sociobiologists and others who have admitted that, of course, these things that we see going on, such as racism and xenophobia, they can have an instinctive basis, just as altruism can. In fact, there's an article in Time magazine, I think it was in 1996, by Robert Wright, called Our Cheating Heart, where he argued that adultery was something programmed into us by evolution, especially males committing adultery, because males want to get their genes into the next generation as prolifically as possible, and that had been something that had been chosen for or selected for in evolutionary process. So he's saying adultery is a genetically inherent trait that's been produced by evolutionary processes. Those are not unusual ideas coming around today in evolutionary circles.
And as a historian, you've studied where these kinds of ideas and applying ethics to evolution have manifested themselves in a non-religious state to the detriment of mankind numerous times throughout history.
Well, yes. A lot of my research has been focused on Nazism and its embrace of evolutionary ethics. But I think we need to remember that in late 20th and early 21st century United States, it also is having an impact. There are those who are arguing for euthanasia on evolutionary grounds. There are those who are arguing for abortion and infanticide on evolutionary grounds. James Rachels, a philosopher at University of Alabama, Birmingham in the early 1990s, wrote a book called Created from Animals, The Moral Implications of Darwinism. And his point was that Darwinism undermines the Judeo-Christian sanctity of life ethic. That was the whole point of the book, in fact. That's the key point of the book, is that Darwinism undermines the Judeo-Christian sanctity of life ethic, and therefore infanticide, abortion, and euthanasia are all permissible. Peter Singer, who's one of the leading bioethicists in the world today, takes a very similar viewpoint. He actually does argue that Darwinism demolishes the sanctity of life ethic, and that therefore infanticide, euthanasia are permissible.
With the overwhelming evidence that you have that shows that ethics is a topic that has been discussed in terms of evolution in biology, how do you account for so many biologists from Emory University signing on to this criticism of Dr. Carson simply for bringing up the fact that evolution has some big-time ethical considerations attached to it?
I think for the same reason that Stephen Jay Gould wrote his book Rocks of Ages, trying to distance evolution from anti-religious rhetoric. Now, Gould himself was a materialist, and if you look at his writings, he certainly does think there are philosophical implications, although I think a lot of it's for public consumption. They want the public to think, oh, you know, we're not destroying your religion, we're not destroying your morality, just accept evolution, it's just this scientific fact, and bring your religion and morality. Don't think that it's an attack on that, because they know that those things are cherished things in people's lives. And if people do see evolutionary biology as being a challenge to their religion or morality, that's going to make them more defensive. So I think it's a way of trying to get people's defenses down by saying, look, you know, you can believe in evolution and still believe your religion. You can still believe in evolution and believe in your morality. We're not trying to challenge those things. But then on the other hand, you start reading what evolutionists are saying among themselves and what they're writing in their journals and writing in their books. And many of them do, in fact, say that evolution demolishes religion. Evolution demolishes morality. That's a very common viewpoint, in fact, out there. So it's not just something that religious fundamentalists, you know, as they're trying to paint it, religious fundamentalists are dreaming up. It's something that Darwinists themselves are arguing.
Do you think with the reaction that Dr. Carson, a man of renown and fame, has received from Emory University, with more than 500 people signing on to this letter expressing all these concerns, triggered by his questioning of ethical considerations in evolutionary theory, do you think that that's going to have a chilling effect on others who don't have that kind of prominence, who might be starting off in an academic career, and might deter them from truly considering what some of those ethical considerations are?
Of course, and that's the whole point of it. The whole point of it is to try to intimidate. And of course, they've made very clear that they're not wanting to disinvite Ben Carson, and I applaud them for that. Mm-hmm. They still believe that he has the merit to be their commencement speaker. And by the way, there was no evidence that he was going to say anything about evolution at the commencement address. He probably wouldn't have, you know, right. So they're the ones who are making an issue. But it's clear that they are calling for greater screening. In fact, from the administration's response at Emory, it seems pretty clear that they are sort of being apologetic. Oh, sorry, we didn't screen it well enough, you know, to find out. So, I mean, it's pretty obvious they are trying to bring a chilling effect. And Emory probably in the future will try to make sure that everyone toes the ideological line here. We remember Ben Stein actually did get disinvited from a commencement address that he was supposed to give. I think it was at Vermont University, if I recall correctly, several years ago. He was actually disinvited from giving a commencement address. So the message here is that if you want to give a commencement address somewhere, you better not quest Darwin.
There is little doubt that this attempt to belittle Dr. Carson will have little to no impact on his career, but the chilling effect it could have on new and vulnerable academics is clear. Help the Discovery Institute stand up for academic freedom and sign an online petition to support Dr. Carson. Encourage Emory University to support and respect Dr. Carson's right to dissent. Go to evolutionnews.org, that's evolutionnews.org, and sign the online petition today. And be sure to share it with friends. This concludes this edition of ID the Future. If you enjoyed this podcast and would like to support the efforts of the Center for Science and Culture, please go to idthefuture.com and click the donate button. This podcast is copyright 2012, the Discovery Institute. All rights reserved.